The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans across South Australia. The program received funding through the Veteran and Community Grants stream in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch and the Emu Tree, and was produced by Christian Teusner. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit www.theemutree.com. Today is the 13th of May. I'm in Auburn and I'm sitting here with Rick Becker. Rick, can you please just state your full name, date of birth and service number, please?
Walter Richard Becker. 16th of March, 1923.
And your service number?
SX39145. Yeah, well, I was born at Shuttleworth and lived there till I was 17 years old. My father worked on a property out of Shuttleworth, about 2 miles, and I lived there and came in to Shuttleworth when I was about three. I went to the Shuttleworth Primary School. Mediocre success. I wasn't a brilliant student, but I wasn't a dummy either. So I was in between. And the Auburn Primary School in those days was at Shuttleworth, this is. I used to walk. Sometimes my friend Willis Draper would donkey me on the bike and then walk up the hill to go to school. Sometimes used to go home for dinner. But most times I took my meal with me for lunch when I went to school. In those days we had a government exam, and we were in grade 7, and to qualify you for secondary education, I got 494 out of 700 in that exam and passed, and was able to go to the Riverton High School, which I went to. I used to get up and go down in a train at about 7:45 in the morning. Riverton's 6 miles away. Twice a week, I'd come home on the cabbage train in the afternoon at about 3 o'clock. Since we used to see the train in the station, we'd just get up and go out and get on the train. Yeah, so I used to get home at 8 o'clock at night for 2 nights. We used to catch Broken Hill Express, which went through Riverton and Shuttleworth. Used to go home on that. Used to move homework down at the school in those nights. That happened for 1 year. And the next year, Dad bought me a bike, and I had rode the bike 6 miles to Riverton.
Fantastic. You must have been very fit.
I wasn't too bad. It used to take me 20 minutes. I enjoyed the school life. Used to enjoy playing football for them. Made the footy team in the first year I was there. We used to play against Clare and Burra, those towns. The school was on a pretty steep sort of a hill, and I had a friend called Willis Draper, and he used to donkey me sometimes, and you could go up one side and down the other on another road, you know. So this day we decided to go down that, wasn't quite so steep, but it was steep enough. And just opposite us, as the road joined the main road, just on the other side was a big stone wall with a gateway on, of course, for the pub. And we went down there and the chain broke on the bike and we couldn't stop her. We just had enough. We were hoping that the pub had a sort of a trapdoor in the footpath. was the door of the cellar that they used to take the beer down in kegs. And if that was open, we'd have gone down the cellar. Anyhow, we got out of it all right, but we got a big fright.
When you were at school, what sort of entertainment did you engage in?
Football. We used to sing and enter into, we had concerts. Especially the final one for the years, we were always in those.
Did you enjoy the music element?
Yes, like that, yeah. Yeah, I was in the school band, yes. Played a flute fife. On the triangle, yeah, on the triangle. Someone, we had a big drum and a kettle drum, and I finished up with a triangle because I was a little bloke, you know. I was quite proud of that fact. It's about all I could play.
Do you remember any of the songs? What the song's titles were?
Work for the Night Is Coming. Onward Christian Soldiers we used to play.
What about singing? Did you used to sing a little bit?
Yes.
Can you recall any songs, and could you give me a line or two from a song, perhaps?
We used to have singing lessons, and I don't know whether I could render a song to you. No, I think we'll move on.
Okay, no problem. What about after high school, when you left high school?
That's a good story in itself, how you came to leave high school.
Oh, yes, that's right. The bloke from 3 miles out of Saddleworth got poliomyelitis, and the school shut down till April, I think it was, and we had to do our lessons by correspondence. I didn't do mine too well, and Dad got me a job, 7 and 6 at Yedunda Farmers at Saddleworth, the local store, and that started me off on the storekeeping, and I've been out in it ever since.
What year was this then?
1938, I reckon. Wow. I reckon I went to high school 36, 37, I reckon 38. I reckon.
How do you feel today?
How do I feel?
Feel
not
okay?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes,
97. Mm. No, I was a spud boy, you know, cleaning windows and out the back in the storeroom when I started. That was my job, was to keep the storeroom clean and tidy and to unpack the goods when they came. We used to get our goods by the rail, and I used to, when I first started, came, there was an old bloke with a horse and trolley, used to fetch them down, and my job would be to unpack and to generally do anything that nobody else would do.
So you're around about 15 years of age at this point?
Yes, I'd have been 14 or 15 there. 38, I'd been working about 2 years or so. By that time I was starting to get in on the counter and filling fixtures and that sort of thing. I can remember that the war started and everybody was talking about it. And I thought to myself, well, I'll be too young to go to this, you know. I won't make this. And I was right in it. It turned out people were going to joining the army, and because they were joining the army, the boss came out to me. My wages were, at that time, 28 shillings a week. And I turned when my birthday came, my wages went up to £2.42 a week. And that was that for about a month. And I thought, gee, I'm going to be able to save a couple of bob here. And the boss came out and he said, they want a young lad at Gladstone. He said, would you like to go? Would you go? And I said, oh, yes, I'll go. And not thinking about my wages or anything. And I went up there and I still got my £2.42 a week, but cost me 30 bob a week board. And I finished up with 4 and 6 to try and run a girlfriend on 4 and 6. I battled all the time, you know. I was under pressure all the time. And I was there about 8 or 10 months, and I was called into the army.
And when was that?
February 6, 1942.
And so how did you feel while this was happening? Like, big changes in your life. Was it exciting? Was it, were you anxious? How did you feel?
I felt all right. I certainly didn't expect it. I was working at Gladstone and come on the Wireless and in the paper. All males between the ages of 18 and 40 had to register at the local post office. And within a very short time, I had a letter from the government with a rail warrant and everything for travel. I had to report to the man in blue at the Adelaide Railway Station. Of course, when I got down there, there was about 30 others there with me. No masters down to Victoria Park Racecourse, and I was in the army.
And what was happening at Victoria Park Racecourse? What happened there?
It was really a receiving depot for... I didn't volunteer at that time. I was only 18, and I was 7'10". I was still growing, late developer, still growing a lot. I was camped under the Derby stand at the Victoria Park Racecourse. And it was and in the mornings at about 4 o'clock, the bloody horses would start galloping down the track work, you know. It's really interesting.
That's really fascinating. And so how many of you were camping here at the racecourse? At that time?
I would say our intake was about 200. Or we were there for about a month. And then went from there, my marches into Adelaide, through Adelaide. All the traffic was stopped and we marched through and all the sailors were waving to us and paper falling out the window, ticket cut. They thought we were going overseas. We just went down to Port Adelaide. It was funny. To Large Bay. We kept the enemy out of Large Bay.
That was the next phase of training.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you at Largs?
Oh, I suppose we walked around there for about, I was a stretcher, but because I was so small, nobody wanted me. And more like me, of course. But we was left, we were the dregs of the intake, you might say. And I finished up a stretcher bearer, and I was the offsider to the doctor. And had a bit of paperwork to do and that. And I helped the doctor, Lancer Whitlow, one day on a joker's hand, thumb. That was my biggest job. I applied the local anaesthetic. Oh dear. I was camped on the Peterhead Corporation Yards on that. So we used to walk down to Semaphore every night from our camp at Peterhead.
What would you get up to?
Sightseeing and trying to get on with the girls, that sort of thing. I was never very successful. I was always too small. Well, the last time before it hadn't changed very much.
But that's a long time
ago. I was there when the Americans came in. When things got tough, you know, in New Guinea. We asked America for help. Well, I landed at Port Adelaide, and that's very close to us. They had to pass through us to get to Adelaide in the train. We used to have quite a good time with the girls at Semaphore, but we were sort of overrun when the Yanks came.
And how did you get, what was the relationship like with the Americans?
They really took over from us, but we weren't agonistic or anything like that. It was quite an amiable setup. I can remember being at a dance at Semaphore when they first came, and they were in like a flash. They're not back with the Yanks, I tell you. They were terrific. They just sort of took over. We were there for, I'd say, 2 months, and from there I went to Sydney. I was in battalion headquarters, and that was at Strathfield. And we were there in a big mansion, and I was in charge of the regimental aid post there, handing out condoms and things, help the doctor. Used to go around there giving injections with the doctor and that sort of thing there. And from there, I reckon the battalion broke up. I was in a garrison battalion. All our fellows were... The main battalion were out along the beaches. At that time, they thought the Japs were going to attack Sydney, I think. I've only found out this since by the telly that the Japs had a plane over Sydney and submarines were in the harbour. I arrived in Sydney about a week after the subs were in the harbour, and Sydney was abuzz with sort of expectations of an attack. It was 75 years out of the day.
Since the end.
The Japanese midget submarines followed in behind a another vessel that was coming in, and they got through the security, and they torpedoed a boat, but it was only a sort of a boat that went from Circular Quay to Manly across the harbour.
Like a ferry.
A ferry, that's the word I'm thinking. After the explosion, they found out it was a midget submarine, and they had it all broken up, and I had a souvenir of that, but they had souvenirs on the roads, certain places around Sydney, and you could buy them for a dollar. And I had one for years, and I've lost it, I don't know where it is.
It was a souvenir of the submarine?
Submarine, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And what was it? Just a piece of
metal?
Mine was a copper pipe, a bit of copper pipe. And they were selling them for the Fighting Forces Compass Fund, way of getting money out of you. They had put, you'd go along Sydney in the main thoroughfare, and there'd be a pile of them, and you could buy it for a dollar or so.
Where did you move on to from there?
I went from Strathfield down to Tom Ugly's Point. Big move. Went down to Tom Ugly's Point, and it was wonderful down there. I was just regular exercise and that sort of thing, nothing in particular. It was the main thing in Tubley's Point at that time was the cabaret building where entertainment was. They used to hold dances down there. And across the road was the pub that had a dog and a cockatoo. One of the attractions of the in those days. But I used to enjoy the dancing there. We were there for about 3 months. I was only 18 at this time. I might have toured 19, but it wasn't very long after I joined up, it wasn't very long. And that was a sort of a young person's battalion. And I had to go out to Dubbo for some infantry training. So that battalion was broken up, and I finished up out at Dubbo. There were 5,000 of us out there in 4 blocks. So I was in K block. In huts of about 40. The main thing was walking, it was marching 20 and 30 miles a day and all this sort of business. Maneuvers up dead creeks. And
how'd your feet survive?
Good, good. Well, I didn't have any feet trouble. They were most particular about your boots. You sergeant would put them on and selected them for you. It was good. They made particular use. They were very particular about your feet, and I didn't give them any trouble. You'd march for 50 minutes, and then I think it was 8 minutes off. That's on days.
Mm.
We did 30 miles one day.
Sleep well?
Yeah. Yeah, I always slept well. Yeah. I think we went up to Queensland to Toowoomba. I went up there. Pineapples were 5 for about a pound, I think it was. All around the shop fronts. So wonderful. Got into those. And I was there for a while. Fleas were very bad there, which didn't worry me, but some people were terrible with them. From there I went to a place called Selheim, which was a staging camp. And I was allotted a battalion from there, the 31st Battalion, which amalgamated with the 51st Battalion to become the 31st 51st Infantry Battalion of the 11th Infantry Brigade. Brigade, yes.
So this staging camp?
At Selheim. It was about 12 miles out of Charters Towers.
What would you get up to there? It must have been... Every day must have been fairly repetitive.
Yes, me and 2 others got lost there. We when we went there, we went and camped in a big shed there, the 3 of us, and I didn't know who were there, I don't think. I made the mistake of walking across the parade ground at about 3 o'clock one afternoon, and the sergeant major saw me and said, what are you doing here? And I said, oh, we're in the camp up there. Oh, he said, oh, he said, you better report on in the morning. Well, then my mob had been allotted a battalion. So I was late in getting to my battalion.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about the, you're saying there's the three of you, the trio?
You sort of pal up with people, and we sort of melded and went through the war together until we got split up.
Who were they? What were their names?
Alec Russell and Ron Jemison. Alec Russell was a Port Adelaide lad. He'd come from Queenstown. And Ronnie Jemison came from Wallaroo. They were lifelong friends until they died. They've gone years ago.
Ronnie Jemison was called Pee-wee.
Yeah, Pee-wee. He was shorter than I was, by 6 inches, I reckon.
So he was really little.
Mm.
Were you scallywags?
No. We used to get into a bit of trouble. We certainly enjoyed army life. Yeah. We weren't very successful with the girls. We tried hard enough, but there was a fair bit of competition, especially when the gangs came. They really pinched the girls off us.
Where did you go to from here?
I went to a place about 14 miles out of Cairns called Edmonton. And that was, we were in amongst the sugar cane and bananas there. Camped on a hillside, it was a beautiful scene. The Cairns Harbour was below us, and there was a flying boat used to come in there every day, and the water at Cairns was blue. It was beautiful from where we were, and you'd just see that the flying boat had hit the water, and it just a streak of white behind him. It was magnificent. And I come there out there a couple of years ago, a few years ago now, and the water's all buggered up. The Yanks come to Cairns and they altered the harbour and they've altered the water. It's all murky and terrible. I was there for a while. Eventually we went to New Guinea, to Dutch New Guinea, a place called Meraki, which is a fair way, I suppose, from Darwin, but not very far.
And you, how did you get there? How did you travel?
Went in the Vandalin, an old Dutch trading ship. No, my fittings, just the hull. Took 2 or 3 days to get up there to Meraki. They made a temporary wharf at Meraki for us. And then, yeah, we got off all right, and I was there for quite some time. I was in B Company, which was across the river from the rest. We had that section to reconnoiter. You know, we were out on patrols 3 and 4 days at a time, and making sure the Japs weren't there. We were on the southern side of New Guinea, you know, the underneath side. And well, the beaches were muddy. You'd get up to your waist in mud if you weren't careful. And the wildlife, the wild ducks and geese, were thousands of them. And we used to spend a lot of time shooting them and having, you could use as much ammo as you want to do with them. And we used to have had a fish trap that we used to have a meal of fish about every month. And it was swampy, foot above sea level, up to your waist in water for a couple of hours at a time. And you'd strike a bit of land that you could walk on and dry out. And we had to make sure the Japs weren't there, you see. And we were there for 12 months at least, 13 months, I reckon. Then came home and had 6 weeks' leave, which went like as if it was yesterday.
Where did you go for your leave?
Up to Saddleworth to a home, and up to Gladstone. I had a girlfriend at that time. Put in a bit of time up there, but very little. At Wallaroo, spent a bit of time off the road at Wallaroo. Had a good time. We went back and did a special training on with live ammo, and that didn't augur very well. I thought we were in for a bit of strife now. And then they started to give us milk at night, and you'd have to drink a bottle of milk. And we went to a little place out of Brisbane. We went from
this place in Brisbane. Mm-hmm.
We went on the Taruna, I think it was, to Horn Island. I thought we were going to be on the Thursday Island, but we finished up on Horn Island, which is about a mile away. And we had an air raid red there, and I rushed out in the tent and fell down a sit fence and bugged my knee up. And I sat a knee stress out like that for 6 weeks, and it fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
Never had any trouble since. from there, from Horn Island, we went to Bougainville in an American Liberty ship called the Sea Snipe, where we only had 2 meals a day on that. But it was a real American setup, although it was American food and all that sort of business. Make your own arrangements, you were camped everywhere and there wasn't much organisation. It was a matter of getting us up there, I think. And we took over from the Americans at Bougainville. They'd captured this small perimeter of about 25 square miles, something like that, and held it and softened them, the Japs up. But we took over from then, and that was where I eventually got wounded there. Our job was to clean the Japs out of Bougainville Island, or help with the 11th Brigade. 3 other battalions were in it too. We had the north side, and we travelled from Torokino Bay to the Ganga River, which would be about 40 miles, I suppose. Bougainville's not very long or wide, but had 2 volcanoes that were active. They used to blow out ash. If it was ash, you could dig a hole in the ground with your hand, and the sand wouldn't move. You know what I mean? And the grass, you could cut them today, and within a week, they're up here. You could about see them grow. It was very fertile. And it's because of this ash that the volcanoes were throwing out. Mount Malby and Mount Pagana, there was 2 of them. We had to clean them out of the north part. And we were there for about 2 months at least, on the way up, just reconnoitering and going a bit further in advance. I was only in a B company, but D company were the lead company, and they struck the Japs just south of Simba Ridge and alerted everybody that we were coming into contact with them, you know. And then it was our turn to take over eventually, and we took over from them at Simba Ridge, which the Japs were very stubborn in holding. And we had to, it was our job to take Simba Ridge. And I, unfortunately, had to be in the first wave that went in.
And what happened there, Rick?
Belted hell out of them to start with, like the artillery and mortars, and they bombed them on Simba before we'd go into action. And I took my place in the line. As I went past my commanding officer, he tapped me on the shoulder and wished me luck. And the barrage stopped, and we charged up the hill. And I got to within from here to about 20 yards, I suppose. And down I went. I didn't quite make it. I lasted about a minute. I can still remember it quite well. Yeah. Bang. Over I went. And my mate, who was alongside me, only from here to the door away, he came over to me and applied first aid, turned me over, and I had a chest wound, and I was sucking air there a bit, and they put a field dressing on and turned me over. And of course, when he turned me over, I must have been a bit exposed, and I got a hit in the back too. So only a flesh wound, never broke a bone, but a big long streak. They had 4 shots at us. They was a bit short, which was unusual because the Japs were good shots. But anyhow, that's what happened.
And the bloke who was next to you was?
Alec Russell.
Was that friend that he had?
Applied the first aid.
Yeah. And he crawled with me out on his back after about a quarter of an hour being there like that. After he'd settled down, we called out that we were there and hit badly, and that he was going to crawl in with me on his back, which alerted the blokes not to shoot at us. they might have been shooting at us all the time, you know. You had no idea who you were in those circumstances. If you were away a bit, anyhow, he crawled out with me on his back, and I rolled the last few metres when I gone on the top, I rolled down a hill a bit. And from there, they picked me a bloke come along with morphia and stuff, which I didn't have. I wouldn't have that. It makes me crook. So I didn't have that. And I was carted from there down to where the doctor was working, which was about 150 yards back along the beach. And he stitched my chest up, put a stitch in it so the air wouldn't come in and out. And I was taken by launch straight down to Torokina Bay. And I was in the hospital there for about a month, I suppose. And they sent me to Lae, and then from Lae by hospital ship down to Sydney. Penicillin worked wonders on me. They didn't give me much hope. But penicillin worked wonders on me. One of the doctors told me you could just about see it working. It was so good. And I continued on in Adelaide with it. But I was a real basket case there for a while. Everything they tried on me worked. My arm, they got that going again. I despaired when I saw them take that plaster off of that. I took a piece clean out of it. Out of there, about 3 inches wide. It was amazing. I got out at Sydney, and the Concord Hospital was chock-a-block full there, the Repatriation Hospital. And they sent me out to a place called Seven Hills, which is 22 miles out. One of the worst experiences I ever had was on that trip from the boat to the hospital at Seven Hills. There was another bloke in the ambulance with me. I don't know whether you've ever seen the army ambulance. I don't think they had any springs in the bloody things. And they were hitting, he was hitting the other bloke. He had the top bunk and I had the bottom. And he was absolutely screaming in agony. And the bloke was hitting these bloody bumps, I reckon tram lines and that sort of thing. A terrible experience, upset me a bit. I hung out there for, I'd say, just about a month. 3 weeks or a month. I remember I asked a nurse if she'd wash my hair there. Hadn't been washed for months. It was itchy. Mm. She got stuck into that and did a good job. I was quite pleased that I asked her. And from there, I went to Melbourne. I can't remember how I got there, but come home on the Melbourne Express to the Adelaide Railway Station. About 8 o'clock in the morning, we finished up at Adelaide, taken by ambulance out to Dawes Road. And I put in, I don't know what, I reckon I got there at May the 4th, and May the 8th, the war in Germany finished. I got out of Dawes Road Hospital on the 1st of July 1946. I was sent down to Kapara, down at Mosley Street in Glenelg. They had a rehabilitation. We used to go down the beach and sit down now and again, you know, and had entertainment there. The girls used to come out and dance with us, nurses from different hospitals and that sort of thing.
With your injuries, did they impair you greatly for a long time?
Oh, yes. Mainly with the endurance section, you know. I was always pretty... could do most things, but not for any length of time. I tired badly. I've only got 60% of air on this side. It's all healthy enough, but it's all scarred and won't expand and contract like the other one, so the doctors told me. And I won't ever get any better. So I was on a full pension for at least, 7 years. I got a review after that. I had to report down to somewhere in town. They cut me back to 80%, and I've been on 80% incapacitated ever since.
You're 97 now.
Yes. Yes. After the war, I didn't think I would be much good, you know. And you get with the lads, and I was as thin as a match with the wood scraped off, you know. I was really 5'3" my weight.
When I came back,
and I had to drink 2 jugs, you know, those beer jugs with a flap over lip. glass jug. I had to drink two of those of egg flip a day for the first fortnight I was at North Row.
So how many years are you living here in Auburn now?
I started on January the 27th, 1955. That'll be 65 years, I reckon.
In this street?
Yeah. Down Witten and up here, yeah. This is a war service home. I built it with the war service home.
They're all the same? The whole street's the same?
No.
No, I was the only one. I had like a shag on a rock for years.
Yeah, it was. This Dad, I think, Dad, you bought the land, didn't you?
Yes, I bought the block.
And then there was the house, was the war service house.
Yeah.
And the block, he's got the acre through to the back, right through to Port Roberts.
Right through an acre.
And how do you feel about the town here and the people?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's changed. I reckon it's helped. I reckon my shop's helped our town. There was a grocery shop up the top, which is now an eatery. And there was one down the bottom, which got houses on it now. And I was the one that survived. It's all in my shop. It's amazing. It just happened like that.
So everybody in this town knows you?
I'd say so.
Right at the beginning, you went and visited every single person?
I went into every house in the town and introduced myself and told them I was going to have a shop and asked for the share of their business. And I didn't get any knockbacks. Well, I got one or two, but they were quite nice about it. You know, they said they'd been dealing off Mr. Madden for years and they couldn't stop. So I understood that. But
as a shop, what was your produce or products?
Whatever I could sell. Groceries mainly. Grocery shop. And I didn't have fruit or veg or anything like that in those days. Or milk. The only reason I got milk was the town ran out of milk when Aunt Hill came to me and said, why don't you sell milk? And I didn't know. I had a little fridge, like a single person's fridge. Wouldn't been any bigger than that television set. And it was Honey Mertz giving me. Yeah. I started off with nothing, really. They were training me to be a manager in the Dunder Farmers. And I thought to myself, well, if I can do that for you down the farmers, I can do it for myself. And my wife come from here and I needed any milk, so I'd never get her to saddle with, so I come to Auburn. That's what happened. Yeah.
And the shop now, because the shop's still trading.
Richard, my brother.
Okay, right, so still in the family.
Yeah. Richard will go with him.
Dad retired on the 50th anniversary of the day that he started.
I put in 50 years to the day.
So how do you occupy your time now? What do you get up to?
Well, I can't. I'm not mobile now, but I had a like lifelong interest in chooks, fowls. I used to show fowls as something different from the shop. Used to take them to shows and that sort of thing. Saddleworth had a show, Barra had a show, Balaclava had a show, Clare had a show. And I used to show Light Sussex chooks for a bit of diversion. I've always been fond of sport, golf. I used to play footy as a young person, but I couldn't do that after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your team?
I'm a North Adelaide man, yeah.
Golf and bowls as well.
Yeah, bowls, lawn bowls.
Bowls till he was
that.
90.
I was 90 when I played that past game. So I entered into town things on all the committees and that sort of thing.
You're 97 years of age at the moment.
Yes.
What advice can you give to generations younger again about living a good full life? What would you say?
To grab every opportunity you possibly can to improve yourself. That's what I'd say. I've always thought, well, it'd be nice to work for myself, and I finally did. And you get that sense of satisfaction out of that, even if you don't all do very good sometimes. There are some good points that you do that's a recompense for those that you fail in. But you've got to have a go. if you want to do any good, you've got to do for yourself. Make up your mind what you want to do and get into it and do it. You've also got to make a good wife, choice for a wife and that sort of thing, and I was very fortunate to do that. I've had a very happy married life, very successful, and someone that was really good.
What was your wife's name, Rick?
Rosemary. Jean Rosemary, really, but she was always called Rose. Oh, she was fantastic. She pushed me along. She'd be 70% of my success.
Thank you very much, Rick Becker, for sharing your stories. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2020.